Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. This month marks 2 years since the Caldor fire ignited and ripped through parts of El Dorado, Alpine, and Amador counties. The wildfire grew to roughly 220,000 acres, destroying over 1,000 homes and structures, as well as forcing evacuations through the foothills and near Lake Tahoe. But the town hardest hit was Grizzly Flats. The small Sierra community, about an hour east of Sacramento, was nearly leveled. Roughly two-thirds of the homes, which butt up against the El Dorado National Forest, were destroyed. And now, some survivors want to hold the U.S. Forest Service responsible, claiming it long knew the wildfire risk, yet failed to fully protect residents. This latest development follows an investigation from Cap Radio and the California Newsroom, which last year found the Forest Service identified the wildfire risk in Grizzly Flats decades ago and developed a forest management plan, yet completed only a fraction of the work leading up to the Caldor fire. The reporter behind that investigation is Scott Rodd, and he joins us now with more on what a lawsuit could accomplish. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Vicky. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for taking the time. So let's quickly walk through a timeline before we dive into what's unfolding right now. You covered the Caldor fire extensively in 2021. Describe the terrain and the conditions that really created a worst case scenario for the town of Grizzly Flats.
Well, you have a small rural community that sits on top of a ridge. It's surrounded by canyons that at the time were overloaded with heavy fuels, lots of brush. There was a lot of old growth, large trees, which typically are resilient to fires. But when you have an area that hasn't seen fire in a long time, we're talking decades, probably some of the areas, close to a century that hadn't seen fire. There's the possibility that there's the likelihood that those fuels underneath, when they get so overgrown, that can create a fire scenario that causes those larger trees to also ignite. And that's what happened in Grizzly Flats. You had, again, a heavily wooded area and canyons where the fire had a few days where it burned and sort of took off up these canyons and had a running start before it hit Grizzly Flats on top of that ridge. And it was at such an intensity at that point that it just blew right through the community and destroyed over 400 homes in the community of about 600 homes.
I mean, unfortunately, it wasn't the only wildfire that you covered that year. Remind us what led to you looking into the U.S. Forest Service's handling, specifically of the Caldor fire and how it impacted Grizzly Flats residents. What was different about this one?
It definitely was not the only fire that I covered or that you covered. That year, 2021, was a bad year for fire in California. Some really big destructive fires hit. And I covered the Caldor fire closely as it was burning, and I revisited it because I'd been told I'd been tipped by a forester who said, there was some planned work, some planned forest management work around Grizzly Flats that just hadn't gotten done. And it was, from that sort of basic generic tip that I started looking into it further, and I found that the Forest Service had actually planned a large project around Grizzly Flats. It had started, it had launched the project years and years ago, over a decade ago, and work on the project, only a fraction of the work got done before the Caldor fire ignited, even though they had years to complete it.
Yeah, I think you found, about 14% of the project was completed by the time the Caldor fire started, correct?
That's right. It was a project of about 15,000 acres. It would have included brush clearing, some tree thinning, lots of prescribed burning, but a small fraction of the work got done. And virtually none of the prescribed burning got done, which is really an essential piece of it, reintroducing low-intensity fire to an area to try to make it ultimately more fire resilient. But that work, very little of that work got done before the Caldor fire ignited. And again, that was, that project bordered all around Grizzly Flats and was designed to protect it from fire. Ultimately, the Caldor fire had ignited and burned right through that unfinished project before it hit Grizzly Flats.
This investigation that you did, it started last year, but it really gained notice across the country. It even led up to Congress. What has been the aftermath?
Yeah, Congress took notice. There was a delegation of over a dozen representatives, both senators from California, who wrote a letter to the Forest Service and demanded answers based on our investigation. They said this is troubling. There were promises made. There was work that clearly was identified that needed to get done, but it didn't. And lo and behold, the worst case scenario happened. The Forest Service had essentially predicted 20 years ago that a fire like this could happen and wipe out Grizzly Flats. And unfortunately, that prediction came true. So from there, Congress demanded briefings. They ultimately held a few informational briefings, albeit behind closed doors. These weren't briefings that were held before congressional committees. And ultimately, not a lot of information from these meetings got out. We were able to get kind of just generic bullet points from the meetings, but not actually, we weren't able to attend the meetings themselves or get recordings of them, unfortunately.
What does the Grizzly Flats community make of the Forest Service briefings to Congress? I mean, it reached the highest levels of government.
Well, definitely at first, there was a sense of feeling, you know, heard and an optimism that there could be greater transparency around this issue, not just for Grizzly Flats, but for other communities too. Part of something that that Congress demanded of the Forest Service was to basically create a list of other towns, other projects where there was a similar scenario where they wanted to get work done, but it wasn't happening. And, you know, the idea was to prevent another Grizzly Flats in the future. But as the process developed, community members in Grizzly Flats were telling me they were feeling frustrated. They felt like there wasn't transparency around this. They wanted to hear what was being discussed in these briefings. They wanted to be involved if possible. They would have loved to have, you know, posed questions or, you know, consulted with Congress members' offices to give their point of view. Ultimately, that didn't happen. And not only that, the Forest Service had planned a meeting with members, residents and former residents of Grizzly Flats. But ultimately, that meeting was canceled at the last minute, and it hasn't been rescheduled. So definitely a feeling of frustration that's lingered. However, there is legislation in Congress that is making its way through the process. There's a piece of legislation that would significantly streamline getting forest management and fire prevention work done. That could be a game changer potentially in trying to prevent this type of thing from happening in other communities. There's also a piece of legislation that would require more transparency and more accuracy with how the Forest Service tracks its work. Because ultimately, if you can't measure properly what work's getting done, you can't assess what else needs to happen and how successful your efforts are. So those pieces of legislation have referenced our investigations, and there is some sense of reassurance with some members of the community that at least that's in the works. But what I hear is they wish there was a bit more transparency around the conversations.
And Scott, as this is happening, rebuilding and recovery is still continuing and ongoing. And as we know from wildfires in recent years, it is a long road to get back to any sense of normalcy. In the 2 years since the Caldor fire happened, I mean, you've stayed in touch with people, with survivors, some who chose to rebuild while others moved elsewhere. What stands out to you about how recovery has been for them?
Slow. The word that comes to mind is slow, and fits and starts for the people who are fortunate enough to start to rebuild. There are a lot of people who are still living in trailers and RVs on burned out properties 2 years out, and they're not sure what they're going to do. They're not sure what their path forward is. A lot of people, this was a community of modest means, and a lot of people could not afford fire insurance because the cost of premiums has just skyrocketed in recent years. For the folks who, it's hard to say that they're fortunate because they lost everything, but I suppose more fortunate where they had fire insurance and have some means to start rebuilding, that process is very slow. I was just texting someone this morning, a woman named Eileen, who is rebuilding on the mountain, and she's hoping to finish laying the foundation at the end of the week for her new house. And we're talking 2 years out and laying a foundation. Not only that, you know, services up there are spotty. Cell service can cut in and out, especially during storms. PG&E is undergrounding electricity lines up there, which seems to have support of community members who are still up there. But even that is proving, you know, complicated. There were a number of times where people lost power up there for, you know, stretches as they were doing this work. And so it's just been a struggle for people up there. Not a lot of people realize that, you know, after a fire for months and years, the struggle continues. It's not just when the fire hits.
It's really hard to understand the financial toll suffered until you are faced with it yourself. I mean, for few people or some people, there's insurance, but as we've learned in recent years, that is often far from enough to rebuild. I mean, how has the financial toll impacted Grizzly Flats residents and Caldor Fire survivors?
Yeah, it's been a huge financial impact. You're right. For the people who have insurance, a lot of times that won't fully cover the cost of rebuilding. The requirements for rebuilding in areas that are fire prone have gotten a lot more strict. On the one hand, that makes sense. You know, rebuilding in those areas with fire resilient materials makes sense given our new reality with wildfire. At the same time, that makes it really difficult for folks who had insurance to then try to rebuild, and they come up against the reality that that new house is going to cost a lot more than what they're given by insurance companies. And again, there's the, you know, reality of folks who didn't have insurance, who lost everything and really don't have any recourse. And a big, you know, frustration among community members is that individual assistance from FEMA did not come through. The way FEMA works is they will provide assistance, reimbursement for things like debris removal and emergency response to local and state governments. And there has been a lot of money from FEMA that's been allocated as a result of the Caldor fire for that reason. We're talking tens of millions, you know, possibly over $100 million at this point. But individual assistance, you know, compensation or assistance that would go directly to individuals and families was denied. President Biden denied it. The state pushed again. They appealed it. And President Biden once again denied individual assistance. And that's been something that's been really frustrating for folks. There's a visit by President Biden shortly after the Caldor fire happened. And he made a remark, something to the extent of, you know, we will make sure these people are taken care of who were impacted. A lot of people in Grizzly Flats and elsewhere took that to mean we'll get individual assistance. So when that didn't come through, there was a feeling of feeling a bit slighted.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with investigative reporter Scott Rodd about the aftermath of the Caldor fire, which ignited 2 years ago this month. So that brings me to the legal action some Grizzly Flats residents are pursuing. What is their argument?
Well, they point to the Forest Service and say, look, we believe that the Forest Service early on recognized this threat of wildfire against Grizzly Flats. Their fire models showed that if a fire ignited on their land, it could easily wipe out the town. They had a plan in place to protect the community through forest management, but that plan did not, you know, they didn't follow through on that plan. They also point to the response during the Caldor fire and say that there was mismanagement on the Forest Service's end. And they also point to, again, FEMA, and they say, we this is a modest means community, and we didn't get any assistance, individual assistance from FEMA. So essentially they say, something's got to give here. I spoke to Marianne Cook. She and her husband lost their home in Grizzly Flats. They've since relocated to a coastal town because rebuilding for them just wasn't feasible. Here's what she had to say.
I didn't feel that we were given any support by the government or by FEMA. We were promised FEMA and it was turned down. So I felt at that point, our only last resort was to do an individual claim against the U.S. Forest Service.
Scott, do you have any idea how many of survivors of the Caldor fire, they want to file a claim? What kind of outcome are they hoping for?
So Marianne Cook and her husband, Rick, have already filed a claim, and I've talked to organizers who are working with other residents in a concerted effort, file claims, and they have to get it in by the 2-year deadline of the Caldor fire, which is coming up soon. And so they the organizer said that, you know, they had estimated about 100, possibly more than 100 people will be filing these claims. And they're hoping for, you know, essentially power in numbers. And in terms of the outcome they're looking for, here's what Marianne Cook told me.
First of all, I would like everyone in Grizzly Flats to be compensated for the neglect of the U.S. Forest Service and also changes to their policies.
What is the Forest Service's response?
Oh, well, I reached out to the Forest Service requesting an interview. They declined. They said that they're not aware of any pending lawsuits against the Forest Service, which makes sense because folks need to file these claims first before they pursue a lawsuit if they decide to do that. So that makes sense. But in general, the Forest Service, you know, stands by their response during the emergency, during the Caldor fire, and they said that there wasn't mismanagement. And in terms of the planned forest management work, they acknowledge that very little of it got done. They say that it's hard to get that work done with shortages in resources, both people, person power, and money. And they also say, just given the reality of hotter temperatures, you know, it's risky to set things like prescribed fires. But, you know, I think quickly going back to Marianne Cook's comments, you know, folks at Grizzly Flats, they want to see compensation for people who lost their homes, lost everything for a lot of people. But they also, a lot of them want to see changes to U.S. Forest Service policies in order to avoid something like this happening again. You know, they see their town as a cautionary tale. We know that there are a lot of other small communities that are against that border Forest Service land and other federal land that are at risk. And these folks, these fire survivors, don't want to see it happen again to another community.
Scott, thank you so much for the update and all the work.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Scott Rodd is an investigative reporter, formerly with CAP Radio, but now based at KPBS in San Diego, updating us on the aftermath of the Caldor fire, which ignited 2 years ago this month, and how some Grizzly Flats residents are filing claims against the U.S. Forest Service. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.